You're listening to Access to Anyone, the podcast that reveals how you can get to know anyone you want in business and in life using everything from the latest technology to the most time-tested principles.
All right. Welcome back to Access to Anyone. I'm your host, Michael Roderick, and we are here today with Robin Colucci, CEO of R. Colucci LLC. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah. So I always love to start out with origin story. And I'm always very interested in sort of what are the things that fall into that kind of call to adventure moment, right? What are those moments in our lives that move us into the work that we're currently doing? So would love to hear just a little bit of your background. And if you did have in your own life, any of those kind of call to adventure moments that moved you into the work that you're currently doing?
Oh, I've had several, I would say.
Love it.
Yeah. So I actually come from a family of writers. So there's definitely some strong genetic leanings that way. And when I was deciding about colleges, I was really into writing poetry, and I did a little bit of short story writing, much more on the creative writing side. And I was looking at majoring in English and maybe going to, you know, a good college that for English, like Vassar or William and Mary or something. And I didn't get into those, but I did get into George Washington University, and they had a major in journalism. And my mother said, oh, you should major in journalism. That way you can get paid to write. And little did she know. I worked in the college paper, and I also was an editor on the college literary magazine there. And I think in my sophomore year, I got a part-time job at the Washington Post as a news aide. And I got to be there for presidential election night. I was there when the Challenger exploded. So now you know how old I am. And, you know, it was really fascinating to watch these extraordinary professionals see something that shocking and then take about a 30-second beat, and then everybody just move into action like the most well-dialed-in machine that you'd ever see. And so it was a very inspiring place to be. And I even did some freelance writing for them, and I had some articles published in the style section and stuff. And so, great job. Really fun people to work with, too. And right before I graduated, the chair of the journalism department called me into his office and said, I've recommended you for a job as a research assistant for a New York Times bestselling author. And if he offers you the job, you should leave the post to take it. I thought, well, that's silly. So I told him, I said, you know, I'm doing really well there, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so he said, just go with an open mind. Will you do that? Yes, I will. So I went, was offered the job, and took it and left the post. And the reason I did all that was the gentleman was by the name of David Wise, and he was arguably the number one expert on espionage in the Cold War and an investigative journalist. And so he had written the very first expose on the CIA in 1964 called The Invisible Government. And he wrote several books after that. And so I worked for him for 3 years, and we did three books. We did a spy thriller novel that was published by Doubleday. We did a political science textbook that was the number one selling intro to poli-sci textbook in the US. And finally, we did a not mass market nonfiction trade book called The Spy Who Got Away, which was about Edward Lee Howard, who had been slated to be the US's Moscow bureau chief, and had been pulled from the position and fired from the CIA at the last minute. And he was very angry about that. So he sold secrets to the Russians.
Wow.
And then fled while under FBI surveillance. Really cool, amazing story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things we watch a lot of these spy thrillers and see all of these crazy sort of blockbuster movies. And sometimes it's so common for us to forget that a lot of these things actually happen.
Oh, yeah. I'd have to say, after working for David for 3 years, that a lot of the stuff that happens is stranger than a Tom Clancy novel. So.
Yes, yes. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so it was a really fun job. And so at the end of that 3 year period, and by the way, when that book came out, there was a national publicity campaign and he was in, you know, on Larry King and 2020 and Today Show and all this stuff. And so it was great. And the deal was at the end of the 3 years, he would recommend me for a newspaper reporting job, which he did. And he found me one in Central Florida. Yeah. And, you know, listen, back then it was really cool to be a journalist and a lot of people wanted to do it. And so, you know, it was not easy to find a job. And so I went down there and it was like a total culture shock for me. Mm. And not just culturally in Florida, which was very different from DC, but also in the organization itself, where it was a completely different brand of journalism. Like I wasn't used to a lot of these sort of approaches and, you know, it just wasn't as professional as the Post. It wasn't like terrible, but it wasn't what I was used to.
Yeah.
And, you know, and David was an impeccable journalist too. So I really struggled there. And after about a year and a half, I got the guy I was dating. I was like, you've got to, he followed me from DC. I said, you've got to get us out of here because if I quit this job, my parents will kill me. So, and he got into grad school in Colorado and I'm like, fine, never had been to Colorado, but it wasn't Central Florida. So I went with him and I thought I was done with publishing. And so here's one of those, what do you call them? One of these moments?
Oh, the call to adventure.
Call to adventure. There's we've already had a couple, but there's a third one. And so I thought I was done with publishing and I landed in a situation where I ended up getting into the fitness industry. And I had been a competitive gymnast in college. So I was kind of little familiar with fitness. I was always interested in anatomy. So anyway, so I had a partner and we built one of the first exclusively one-on-one personal fitness training studios in Denver. And we put it in a really athletic, well-to-do neighborhood. And so we did very, very well. And about 10 years in, I realized that while it was a fun job, it wasn't my calling. Mm. And so I ended up ending that partnership and I wasn't really sure what I was going to do, but I thought, you know, if there's one thing I observed while I was building a fitness business is that there's a lot of brilliant people who do work in fitness, but they don't really think like business people. A lot of them, they think more like, you know, more about the art of the wellness work. They don't think a whole lot about the business side. Mm. And I just was kind of good at thinking of both. And so I'm going to be a business coach for wellness professionals. So, so I actually enrolled myself in a 2-year spiritual psychology program at the University of Santa Monica, a master's program there. And it was interesting because I learned how to listen, how to ask questions that help people get to their authentic truth and to listen, not just for what they were actually saying, but to listen for the essence of what they were saying. And I basically practiced that for an entire weekend a month for 24 consecutive months for 2 years. Wow. And I had some clients and I helped them improve their businesses in wellness, which was really fun. And then a really funny thing started to happen where a couple of my clients said to me, well, you know, what I really want to do is write a book.
Mm.
And now we have our next adventure moment. And I was like, oh, I totally, totally could help you with that. Like, I know how to do that. And so Because I did. I knew how to do a book proposal. I knew how to talk to agents. I knew how to work with publishing houses. I knew all of this from my work with David. And so I started to do that, and my clients started to get extraordinary results. And what a couple of things that I found really interesting about that part of the journey was that so much of book coaching, first of all, is deep listening and, and asking questions to help the author get to their authentic truth, at least the way I view book coaching.
Yeah.
And to really listen for the essence of what they're trying to say, because they don't always, they often don't use the right words the first time to convey what they want to say. And my experience growing and selling a business also helped me to grow this business.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of clients who are in business. You know, we do a decent number of business leadership books. And so I realize, and for anybody listening who's thinks you're off track or isn't sure what track you're on, I mean, I realize that these apparent detours were actually very important bends in a karmic river that landed me pretty much where I started, but in a different, whole different level, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you're bringing up something that I think a lot of people either forget or don't necessarily notice very often, which is this aspect of there really isn't a dynamic of this is the trajectory and I'm going to go, it's going to be this, you know, sort of straight line from here to there. You know, yeah. We always have these detours, right? We always have these moments where we stop off in something, and sometimes it's literally dabbling, right? Sometimes it's literally, we're just like, oh, well, this is kind of interesting. Maybe I'll kind of play around in this sandbox for a little while. But all of those moments where we dabble and sort of check out something, or times where we're sort of in one industry for a little period of time and realize we don't necessarily belong in that industry, they all stack up and eventually create this very, very specific experience that we have, where we're able to come to our work in a completely different way because we have all of those varied points of view.
Exactly. And I'm able to bring to the conversation so many skills that I just would not have had if I had just stayed in journalism or gotten a PhD in English or, you know, there's so many directions I could have gone that would not have given me the same tools that I have that are so vital to my work today. So I think it's kind of fun to think about.
That's why I always open these episodes with these origin stories, because there's so many different directions you can go. And there's just always a lot that you can learn. You see a lot of patterns in terms of how people navigate through these different industries and through these different careers and that side of things, which is one of the reasons why I always love to start with that. So tell us a little bit about what is the problem that you solve for the clients that you currently work with?
Well, the problem that my team and I solve is that the person is usually very clear that they want to author a book, and equally clear that they don't know what they're doing.
Mm.
And so they are stuck, especially because our clients tend to be pretty high performers. And so they want, of course, the book to be excellent.
Sure.
And don't really feel like they can afford a flop, or something that's not going to reflect well on them or really showcase who they are or get across what they mean to say, right? Which is huge. And so, yeah, generally that's the problem they want to solve. And they also think they don't have time to do it. So
very, very interesting. So let's actually unpack that. Because I think that is probably one of the biggest issues that pops up I would say across the board in the world of entrepreneurship, whether it be a book, whether it be a course that somebody is developing, whether it be a talk, whatever it is, there's always sort of this classic scenario of, well, I don't possibly have the time to make this happen or to do, you know, to do this particular thing. So would love to hear, how do you work with your clients and sort of help them think through this aspect of, I don't have time? And if somebody's out there thinking, oh yeah, I'd love to write a book, but man, I don't have the time to do that. What do you say to those people?
Well, I think the first thing is you probably don't have time to figure it all out yourself. Right. So whether it's me or somebody else, but get a good coach, get a good ghostwriter to help you, because learning how to write a really great book on your own literally can take decades, right? Mm. of writing practice and being edited a lot. And, you know, I mean, it's not necessarily the most intuitive thing, especially if you're not already a writer. And so one thing to help protect your time is to get the right help. Mm. And then I think it's just about, and this is tricky because I can't, you know, I know that there's a lot of platitudes out there. Well, write every morning, write for 3 hours a day, you know, right. And what I've found is that everybody tends to have their own special formula that's going to work best for them.
Yeah.
I think the key is to figure out what that is as quickly as you can and then do it. And I know it sounds very almost flippant to say, just do it, but it really is the only way. Mm. It's the only client we've ever had who failed. It was because they didn't do what they needed to do.
Yeah.
No matter how much we encouraged or begged or bribed or, you know, and so it really, I think you have to make the decision that it's important, and that and treat it like you would a meeting with an important client or an important person in your life or an important podcast interview. You know, you show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think those are all great points. And I've written about this in the past where one of the things that anytime that I've ever been in a rut, anytime that anything has not worked out, I have always come back to, I call it embracing the tedious, where basically like you just, you know, that you got to get this thing done and you know that it has to be a consistent effort. You know that it's not just going to be like, boom, it's taken care of. So you just say, okay, this, you know, whatever the cadence is you decide on, however you want to structure it for yourself, whatever works, but you sit down and you do it, you know, and you just, you know, you push through the fact that yes, it's going to be monotonous at times. Yes, it's going to be boring. Yes, you're going to sit down uninspired, but you just got to do it, right?
And you're going to hate a lot of what you write at first.
Yes.
And I think that's the it's not abnormal to throw away 75% of the total words that you write in order to end up with a readable book.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not unusual at all. And I think that people vastly underestimate how important the editing and rewriting is. And in a way that should be good news, because that means if you can just get any draft done, then you've got something that your coach or your editor can help you with.
Yeah.
But if it's all trapped in your head, you're doomed.
Yeah. 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 That is totally true. And I remember when I would write plays, that was always the thing that, you know, they would make jokes about, they call it killing your babies, right? There would be this like, you know, there would be this piece of dialogue that you were just like absolutely in love with. And you're like, wow, this language is so rich. It's so amazing. I love it so much. And then you'd give it to your professor and your professor would be like, yeah, cut this entire section. Oh man. I remember those days. So one of the things I talk a lot about on the show is relationship building. And I'm always really interested in just different people's processes about it and ways that they think about it. And I imagine that once you start turning out successful clients who start doing, you know, who start doing well, you know, there's usually an influx of people who start to kind of come and they want to talk to you and they want the, you know, they want your time and they want your attention. And, you know, you start to kind of get to this place where a lot of people want to have a conversation, but you don't necessarily have the time to always have the conversation. So I'm curious, have you developed for yourself a filtering system, a way that you're able to manage the influx that comes when people, you know, say, hear you speak or hear you present something or hear about you from somebody else? And now you've got a lot of people who want to meet you kind of all at once.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's not just prospective clients, right? It's, oh, I need to connect you with this person or please meet with this person. And it can be, it can, like some days, you know, even though I try to filter, some days it takes a substantial chunk of my day. But, you know, it's, there's a lot of value, first of all, in connecting with new people. And, you know, there's like a whole universe of gifts in every person. So it can be tricky. I know when people come in or, you know, if people hear me speak and they're interested in learning more about our services, I do have my ops manager who speaks with them first, just to get a clear picture of what they are looking for, what their goals are, you know, just to make sure that it's even potentially a fit, right? Because we don't, I mean, we're really not for everyone, and that's okay because there's plenty of people out there who could serve that person. And so we do have that initial conversation with her. And then also it makes my conversation with them more productive because she's already asked the more mundane questions and I can get into the, you know, more nitty gritties of what they're really looking for and stuff. So that's one thing that we've done. It's tricky, isn't it, Michael? Because I hate to say no to anybody, but at the same time, you know, I think, Like for example, I had an introduction made and I was basically, based on the initial description, I thought, I doubt this person's going to be a fit. But what I did was I wrote back to them because this person had asked for the introduction.
Sure.
And I, you know, here's what I'm seeing about your project and just kind of where you're at and your goals. And I don't think that this is going to be a fit, but I haven't spoken to you yet, right? So if you think that it's still worth a conversation, I'd be happy to have that conversation. Because I also look at it too, like I do try to talk with people, you know, if it makes any amount of sense at all, because I think that even if they're not a fit for our business, if I can point them in the right direction and be of service somehow, I really feel that the universe has an automatic built-in reciprocity system.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might not come from that person, but I mean, I've had a lot of conversations where I just helped someone and sent them on their way. Mm-hmm. I pretty much knew at the beginning of the call, there was no way they were going to really offer me anything, at least not that day.
Yeah.
That would be, you know, transactional in any way. But I'll tell you, There have been many times in the last, you know, I mean, I've been an entrepreneur for over 30 years. There have been many, many times where I was like, ooh, you know, cash flow is a little light right now. You know, I really need to create something, and literally something lands in my, like just falls out of the sky and lands in my inbox. And it's like, oh, look, new big client, you know? And I really think that part of that is, you know, you just give what you can generously and it always finds its way.
And I mean, you're bringing up something that's really important, right? Which there's a lot of advice out there that ends up being taken really to the letter about guarding your time and managing your time and only talking with certain people, you know, all of those different types of things. But what's not often addressed is that while somebody is telling you, oh, you only need to surround yourself with these people and then you'll be successful and all of this other stuff, that there are all sorts of instances and cases where you just every once in a while help somebody out, have a conversation with somebody, even if it's not, you know, even if it's not a fit. And you never know where those things are going to lead, right? It's not that you do it all the time and you inundate yourself with meetings that make no sense, right? You do, you know, create some, you know, some boundaries, but you also don't just sort of lock yourself off from sort of any other serendipitous opportunity, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's a huge, you know, you have to be very careful not to just be like, well, I only talk to this certain type of person, right? Because mm-hmm. then you lose touch with reality.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot, right? Talking mm-hmm. to some of the more people, what people might say are some of the more lowly people on this planet. I've learned quite a lot of great stuff from them, you know?
Yeah.
And so I
100% agree. I mean, my very first job, I was a dishwasher in a family restaurant. And one of the things I often will say is that once you've cleaned food off of other people's plates and taken out other people's trash, you'll never look down at anybody for the rest of your life. You know?
So I used to say, because I waited tables at a couple of points of my life during this adventurous journey that I've described.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, I think everybody should have to wait tables for 6 months.
Yeah.
Before they're allowed to eat in a restaurant.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. See what that world is like. Have an understanding of what it is like to be the person who is serving somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. Like how powerful is that lesson for so many people? How much do you learn about people and about yourself really when you have that kind of experience, right?
Right. And actually you learn a lot of skills like how to hold a bunch of things in your head at once.
Yeah, right. All the different tables, all the different orders.
how many plates can you stack and get to the dishwasher without dropping any?
Yeah.
All kinds of skills. It's almost like working for the circus.
Yes. It definitely has that. Yeah, it definitely has that vibe. So in terms of the world of writing and writing a book, I think that what we have seen, I would say over the past like 5 or 6 years, has been this entire shift of business opportunity oriented kind of selling around a book, right? Where people are like, write a book and become famous and write a book and make money and all of these different types of things. So my guess is that you have a very, very different view on all of this, that you are not the person telling people, hey, write your Amazon bestseller and build your million-dollar business. So tell us more about your philosophy and sort of how you think about it and what you say to all the people who are maybe being convinced to write very big checks for things that aren't really going to pay off that much.
The first thing I would say is you do not write a book to have a business. You write a book to grow one that you already have, that's already giving you money, that you're already able to pay your bills with. Because for, like you said, it's an investment to write a book. It's mm-hmm. an investment of a substantial investment of time, which we've already talked about. It's a substantial investment of money. And I think the biggest cost of writing the book too soon in your career is it gives you the illusion that you're being productive.
Mm.
It gives you the illusion, oh, I'm working on my business. No, you're not. You're not. you are not working on your business. You are working on an illusion that this is going to somehow magically, you've bought your magic beans is what you've done. But you're not growing a business. And I used to have a lot, had hundreds of these conversations where I've sent people away. And I said, look, go make some sales. What you need to do, stop writing your book right now and learn how to have a sales conversation and sell somebody something and do it again and again and again until you're paying your bills with your business. And then we can talk again. And I realized that was a good answer, but it wasn't the best answer because I was sending them back into the shark infested waters.
Yeah.
So we did start to offer like a small group masterclass to help people write a booklet. There's an important distinction here because I think it's okay if you can do a quick turnaround, short authority piece that can actually, you know, that provides value in a 20 minute read that actually can help you grow your business. And it does give you, you are an author, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's appropriate for somebody who's at that level, but you don't write a book so that you can have a business. I'd say that would be the most important thing. And then I could back that up, which I don't know if you were going to go here, but I'm a really strong believer in, we don't write a full length book in a weekend either.
I have a friend, he's in the coaching business. And he always says this line, which I quote all the time, that the things that are really good for marketing are often really bad for real life. I just love that quote. And, you know, I think with books, that is one of the ones, right? That you can write a book in a weekend, that your book can suddenly turn you into a business owner if you've never sold anything before, right? Like all the...
It can suddenly make you an authority, even if you have no experience in what you're writing about.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And all the, you know, all these different types of things. But, you know, I think that the, you know, the thing that I see is that there are a lot of people out there who want to believe that they can have the things that they dream of and that they're super excited for without paying any sort of price, without really making, you know, any significant, you know, investment, whether it be of time, effort, or whatever the scenario is, justify it.
And what's worse, Michael, is they sometimes think they can do it by just writing a check. Like if I pay $40,000 for somebody to help me write and publish my book, I'm going to be successful and I'm going to sell 100,000 copies on Amazon. You will not. You will not. Now, some people win the Powerball. So maybe some people will.
Yeah.
But those are your odds. It's more like that. Right. And I mean, I think that what's missing, and you know, I don't know if I've mentioned, but I have a real beef with this whole idea of manufactured authority, you know, which is really what we're talking about. And I think that, you know, it's so important. First of all, if you do that, if you try to skip ahead and write superficially and just sort of copy what you've read other experts say and put it in your own words in your own book, but it's not really your original work, you miss all the fun of figuring out who you really are and what you really stand for and what you're really good at and what you're bringing to the conversation that no one else has yet. And the only way to do that is to do the work. But I think that what people are missing is they don't realize like that's where the fun is.
Yep. The amount of personal discovery that shows up when you actually put in work, usually work that you are not exactly, you know, running to the table, to do, I have often found it's just always been pretty substantial, right? That aspect of really doing that honest digging, really doing that, you know, asking those questions of what do I really have to say, as opposed to what can I parrot, right? What can I just sort of rattle off that'll make me seem smart, you know, kind of thing.
So. Or what am I writing that I'm just assuming is true because I read it somewhere? And stop asking yourself, but is it true? Or is it true still? Because a lot of stuff that's already published was true when it was published.
Yeah.
But a lot of things change, right? And this is where, and honestly, Michael, this is the secret of being an author. What we're talking about is how you actually develop your superpowers. Mm. Because being an author, you know how it carries that gravitas to it. It carries that weight, right? People look at you differently when you say you're an author. You might as well have a big A on your chest, but not the Scarlet A.
Yeah.
Like the Superman A. I'm an author. And people automatically, oh, you are? What did you write? Well, the reason why we still have that reaction, even with all the posing and manufactured authority that's going on out there, we still have that reaction because it does change you. If you actually approach it, not as like, I'm just going to spit out what I already think I know, but I'm going to question everything I think I know. Mm. And I'm going to make sure that what I'm already saying is what I actually mean. I'm going to update my beliefs, right? Yeah. As I'm in this process, I'm going to turn this writing a book into a deep personal inquiry to discover what I actually believe, what I actually value, what I actually want people to know. And when you do that, it changes you. It does make you a better authority, and it makes you a better communicator of the value that you have to share. So you, and this is where the superpower comes in, because you have that everywhere you go, every conversation you have, every speech you give, every sales conversation, every conversation with a client, whatever it is, you have made distinctions about your work through writing that you carry with you to everything you do.
Yeah.
And it's not holding the book in your hand and saying, look at me, I'm an author. That doesn't make you an author. And that's why the write a book in a weekend kind of approach, or, you know, let us interview you for 4 hours and then we'll write a book for you. And there you go, off and running. That's why those books never have that kind of same impact on the author's career, because the author didn't change.
Yeah.
Not the book.
They just rattled it out.
You change. The book is evidence that you changed. The book isn't the change. The book is evidence of a transformation that you went through. Mm. And that's why it's so important to, yes, it should take 4 months minimum, 6 months as average. And if it takes a year, it takes a year. But you're going to, you will up level in every aspect of your life and your work if you really approach it that way.
I love that. So we're starting to get close to the end of the show, and there's a question that I ask. There's a question that I ask every guest. But before I get to that question, there's another one that that I surprise people with. So you're going to get surprised. This one is, what would you consider to be the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Oh, God. I'm just going to tell you the first one I thought of.
Awesome. It's
from my father, and he borrowed it from a very famous author. But it was Follow Your Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. It's and we don't do that enough, right? There's lots of instances of folks who don't necessarily acknowledge that one. So awesome. So if folks are listening and they're saying, oh man, this is amazing stuff. They're going back, they're listening again, and they're like, I need to talk to Robin. I need to know more about Robin, what Robin does. Where should they go and what should they do?
Yeah, well, robincolucci.com So not very cryptic, but easy to find. I presume you'll have a link, but it's C-O-L-U-C-C-I. So R-O-B-I-N-C-O-L-U-C-C-I.com. And we have a button that says, connect with us and or something to that effect. I honestly don't remember what the words are, but you'll find it. And we have an application there that you can fill out and then get on our calendar and we'll chat with you and see. And listen, whether or not you work with us, our goal is just to help you get clear on your next step. So, don't hesitate to book a call.
Love it. Love it. All right. So we are on to the final question of the show. It's often referred to as the golden question. So Robin, as you know, the name of the show is called Access to Anyone. And the question that I ask every single guest is if you could have access to anyone, you get a chance to sit down with anyone you like, they have to be living. Mm-hmm. Who would that one person be?
Well, I gave this some thought. And I would choose, and I better hurry, Barbara Walters.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
And the reason is that she was, I was born in the 60s. So I was, a young woman in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And Barbara Walters, to me, was an extraordinary role model. I remember watching her on the Today Show. I remember watching her. Now, you have to understand, this is very, very early days. There were not a whole lot of women in journalism, period.
Yeah.
And I watched her interview Anwar Sadat, the president of Egypt. I watched her interview Henry Kissinger. And when I saw her interview with John Lennon, I just was so blown away and so impressed. She changed my thinking about what was possible for a woman, in the field of communication, which I think on some level I always knew that would be the pillar that I'd end up under, the column I'd end up in. And so I would love to chat with her. I would love to acknowledge what an amazing role model she's been. And I would also love to hear talked with her directly about her experiences of what that must have been like for her.
That's amazing. So folks, if you and Barbara are hanging out at any point, Robin would love to hear from you. So definitely reach out and say hello. And again, Robin, thank you so much for coming on the show. So much great stuff here. Just really, really fantastic conversation overall.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's been my total pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And thank all of you for continuing to listen. I'm Mike Roderick. You've been listening to Access to Anyone, and we'll talk to you next time.